All right, welcome back. Continuing to listen to the weekend edition of the KE Report. And now moving over to the energy sector, oil and natural gas. Chatting with Joseph Schachter, founder and editor of the Schachter Energy Report. Writes the Eye on Energy Report. That's his free report now on Substack, where you can follow along with more of the fundamentals around the oil and natural gas sectors. And that's where we're going to start here, is with oil. We've been talking a lot about oil over this last month or so. And one thing I just keep looking at is that price breakdown on the oil chart below that $65 a barrel level. I find that to be a key level for oil to regain so it can get back into a trading range that it was in for a few years. Problem is, even with a lower US dollar right now, oil is still stuck below that level, about $62 a barrel. A lot of different negative factors playing into this lower price, OPEC raising production levels. We're also seeing storage being at pretty high levels. We're seeing weak Asian demand. There's a lot of things pushing this oil price down, but we do also have geopolitical factors that are, I guess, supporting somewhat of a oil price. It's a real mixed bag here. Personally, I still see a lot of negatives out there. So, Joseph, how are you balancing out the negatives and the positives for oil?
I think you covered it really well in terms of the different drags for higher and lower pricing. I think the key is going to be that summer driving season's coming very shortly after the July 4th long weekend for the U.S. We're going to see a lot more people spending time at home, you know, tariffs and, you know, job issues. You know, in Canada, the same thing. People will not be driving to the States. They'll be driving within Canada. So I think that the demand normally, once you get into the summer driving season, increases 1 million to 1.5 million globally. And that will be the trigger for moving prices back up. In the meantime, the issues that we're seeing with inventories, they were up this week by 13.4 million total stocks. The EIA released that on Thursday. And U.S. demand was down 714,000 barrels. And year to date, it's only up 0.8. But motor gasoline demand is negative 0.2 versus a year ago. And the jobs number we saw from the ADP wasn't so good. We'll get the official job data from the U.S. on Friday. If it looks like there's weakening demand on the job side, part of it being all these people being sent out of the country that might have been working in, you know, low paid jobs, including agricultural jobs. So I think that, you know, we're going to be in a period of a little bit of a mess here. I'd be watching the bond market, the U.S. bond market, the 10-year and the 30-year bonds. If they break out to new highs in yield and the auctions don't go well, historically, auctions are 2.5 to 3.5 times bid. So if they're doing 10 billion, you want to see 25 to 35 billion of bids. And if that number is 1.5 to 2, that's no good. And under 1.5, it's a problem. And usually when you get the bids that low, then the Fed arm twists the banks to pick up more and get the bid level up and make them take more of the paper of that auction. So if we see any, you know, bond vigilante issues in the coming months because of the debt, the deficit, you know, they can't pass the increase in the debt limit, that could be the problem. The rise in interest rates also is a problem for banks. As you remember, Sovereign Bank got beat up and many banks got forced mergers because the interest rates went up and they had a lot of treasuries on their books. Japan is the one that seems to be the one having difficulty because interest rates went from negligible to, I believe, in the 3% range. And many banks there, many insurance companies there have taken massive losses. And so that is an issue that could spread. And so that could be part of how we get the correction in the general market. And if we do see the market correct that 10-15% that I think it should, and we get the AI tech stocks at much lower levels, that would then give us the next buy signal for the general market. And energy probably getting back to the 56-58 would probably bring stocks down 10-15%. And with many of them having very good yields, buying them 10% lower, 15% lower would be a great buying opportunity.
Well, Joseph, just to that point, so if we do see the general markets have a correction and that pulls down not just U.S. equities, but also a lot of the oil stocks, which are U.S. equities along with them, you would see that as an area where you could accumulate because oil would be in the mid-50s. But you've maintained that you still see higher oil prices up in the 70s by the fourth quarter of this year. Walk us through if people were to take advantage of that dip and buy the energy stocks in a mid-50s environment, what takes oil back to the 70s then by the end of the year?
Well, the first is you've got, bull and bear views of demand growth this year. The bears say maybe 700,000-800,000 barrels a day. The bulls 1.4 million. So that's the range for that. We know we're going to see, 411,000 barrels in May, June, July from OPEC. But I don't believe they really have the volumes. I think we're going to see that in the next few months. So when the OPEC report for May comes out, next time we talk, we can go over it and see what they did in May. And that should be released in the next week or two for May. And then we'll see June in mid-June. So each of these reports will be watched carefully to see if OPEC really has the volumes. From what I'm seeing, many of those countries are just getting more quota increase. They're already cheating, but they can't bring on more barrels. The only two countries that really have barrels that they can increase are Saudi Arabia and Kuwait. So we'll see, as we go along what happens there. But the real reason I'm bullish for the fourth quarter is Venezuela on May 27th was told they cannot export anymore. Chevron was told that they cannot bring 260,000 barrels a day into the United States Gulf Coast. So the big problem for Venezuela is they're selling a lot more to China and India. And if the sanctions are put on aggressively and banks and shipping companies and insurance companies on those ships tell the buyers, you can't do that, that's going to knock off 500,000 barrels a day of demand from 1 million to 500,000. And then Iran, if they don't do a deal in the first Trump administration, when they put sanctions on Iran, they were able to knock the consumption down or sales down by 2 million barrels. So even if it's conservatively 1.5 million between that and Venezuela, 2 million barrels not on the market in the fourth quarter, plus demand growth, I think that's going to be the reason for, $75 to $80 oil in Q4. And I think we peak through during 2026, during periods of cold weather or strong demand in the summer driving season, that we'll see $90 handle. So that to me is going to mean that oil stocks, that the ones you can buy in the next bargain window, potentially have upside over the next 12 months from E&P and service sector of 50% or more.
Just interesting to see OPEC, some of their comments saying that they are targeting, they're trying to regain market share and they're trying to push out some of the higher cost US shale operators, plus Saudi Arabia. Their price cuts to nearly 4-year lows seems like they're trying to take back some of this market share. I am curious what you think, though, of these rising inventories. The inventories in the US are the highest since pretty much last year at this time. And that continued weak Asian demand. What do you see in these inventories in terms of history? How quickly can they be worked off when we are seeing them continue to build and we're continuing to see demand globally fairly weak?
Well, we're in the shoulder season now before the summer driving season. The two strongest demand seasons are winter and then the summer. So if the world demand this year is going to be averaging 105, we might have 106, 107 in the wintertime, 106 or so in the summer, but 102, 103 during the shoulder seasons. And that's when you rebuild inventories for those higher demand periods, which is the summer and the winter. And again, refineries have to convert to different grades of crude. In the summer, of course, they have to be more environmentally supportive for emissions for the summer grades. So that's why if you look at the utilization from the EIA today, 93.4% utilization, up 3.2 compared to a week ago, 90.2. A year ago, that was 95.4. So we're seeing the utilization of refineries converting to make summer grades. And that's why the inventory builds are occurring. And if we see the driving season starting week one, week two of July, start to draw those inventories down, then the bullish thesis is intact.
Well, Joseph, let's also shift over to nat gas and work that into the discussion. When you look at U.S. pricing, it's around 370 at the time of this call. Still hanging out there in the middle of the range it's been in. But I know that AECO pricing is a lot lower. I wonder, can the Canada's pricing in the nat gas market close the gap a little bit on the U.S. price? And then we hear a lot about LNG terminals. We hear a lot about electricity and the demand for nat gas power. What's your outlook on nat gas in general over the next, let's say, 6 months to the end of the year?
Well, let's go into the U.S. first. There's a number of new projects, new LNG trains coming on before the end of the year. So those new trains plus winter will probably push the price of NYMEX into the 4-4.5 range from the 370 that you mentioned that it's trading at today. For AECO, it's pretty horrible at $1.95 an MCF. But starting next month, we start moving LNG through the trains at LNG Canada, and they start exporting them. And so 1 BCF, I think, is where they're going to start per day. And then by the end of the year, it might be 2 BCF a day. And then hopefully more projects will get approved, given the friendliness between the provinces and the federal government on pipelines for natural gas and LNG, et cetera. So I think that sometime in Q4, we should be looking at AECO trading in the $3 range. And in 2024, maybe 354, depending upon, you know, how cold the winter is and how strong the demand is for Asia. And so, you know, if the Chinese are not buying from the United States because they're still having the tariff war, they may be a buyer for Canada, and that might push the price up quite a bit. And then as other projects move forward, we'll see that, you know, them trying to capture TCFs of reserves. And that could lift the price as well, plus potentially M&A deals to buy up more natural gas companies is part of what I think will happen in 2026.
Joseph, I'm curious what you have to say about seasonality. Natural gas is subject to seasonality. Time and time again, we know when high demand kicks in, we know when demand tapers off. And yes, it depends a whole lot on weather, but with more LNG terminals and with the longer term bullish outlook for demand coming from AI data centers, do we see less seasonality in this market?
The LNG market, you know, because Europe is trying to refill their stocks for next winter, and also the same thing with Asia, you see less shallowness in the soft periods of spring and fall. But it is, you know, the demand domestically that matters a lot, because it's a bigger component of the usage versus the export market. For example, the exports on oil today, 3.91 million barrels of light oil were exported, but that was down 394 from a week ago. And the U.S. was producing 19.5 million barrels. So, you know, they were importing probably 3.8 of Canadian, because they need the heavy oil. I'm interested to see if that pops over 4 million as we see Chevron losing the ability to bring in heavy crude into the Gulf Coast. And I'll be watching to see the Canadian numbers pick up. If they do, Enbridge still has a little room. We know that there's probably 200,000 barrels more available on TMX, but that TMX could be full within a year. You saw the Strathcona deal on Hardisty, where they're going to take over the facility to load tankers so that tankers can be taking heavy crude to wherever the demand is. So they're making a bet that there won't be an Eastern pipeline. Even if TMX does expand it a little bit and Enbridge expands it a little bit, we're going to see the growth in the heavy oil in Canada need to go by rail again.
Well, Joseph, I appreciate you laying down the framework for the oil and the nat gas macro side of things, but let's shift over into some of the companies now. And I want to pose a question for you. Would you be more animated by stocks that are more totally oil-focused, totally nat gas-focused, or that have a hybrid play where they've got a nice mix of oil, nat gas liquids, and nat gas? Which one would you think has the edge over the next quarter?
Over the next quarter, I don't want to predict, but between now and year end, I think the oil price recovery is going to mean that oil stocks will do much better. And you go to something like a Whitecap, trading today at 860, it's got an 8.6% dividend yield. You look at a Vermilion, which is about half and half, you got a 5.5% dividend yield. You look at Enbridge, a pipeline yielding 6%, Freehold Royalties, a 9 cent monthly dividend, 8.8%. So you've got some very, very attractive yields. Marin Energy, the old Africa Oil, 10.8%, and Surge Energy, which is, 24,000 BOEs a day, paying a monthly dividend, 9.9%. So there's a lot of exciting things out there. And I also like the natural gas-focused companies because the leverage to those companies is very significant. So a Pinecliff will do much better. You'll see, Kiwetinohk do much better, Bonterra do much better. And, everybody is going to want to own the Stars, which are, the Tourmalines, Paramounts of the world. So to me, there's a lot of opportunity. You do want to even have some of the service sector because right now the stocks are trading close to 52-week lows. And, you're looking at companies that will benefit because as the utilization rates go up, as we start drilling more to meet the LNG export demand, that's going to cause rates to go up for both the drillers, the service industry, and the frackers. So we think people should have exposure to those companies as well. And, for example, in our case, we own Trican.
What about dividend paying stocks? A lot of people do move into the energy sector for income type stocks. If oil hangs out, if it doesn't recover quite as quickly as you think, if nat gas stays at this level, how attractive are the dividend paying stocks? How solid are dividends?
Well, if you're looking at $50 oil, I think you're going to have to be doing a lot of due diligence on balance sheets and cash flow and debt payments and all that. And you might find some companies may not be able to pay the dividends. If we peak down for a very short period of time to 56 to 58, and then we get into the summer driving season, which is a month or two away, demand picks up, prices pick up, and then we go into Q4 and Iran and Venezuela are out of the market. That's when I think the bullish story takes it's the winning position, and I think you'll see much higher prices then. So the industry can't make money at $62, $63 oil. It's just trading, dollar for dollar, and companies want to make a profit, so they're only going after their tier one inventory because they can make 1 year returns on them, but tier two and tier three are not economic. So you're going to start seeing more weakness in U.S. production over time. And I think the Canadian numbers will be flat. Companies will be reporting flat quarter over quarter numbers. And the focus for the debt companies is that they're going to want to knock down debt. And if they're paying an NCIB, they may not spend much money on the NCIB when prices are low. And when prices pick up back into 70s, they'll reactivate their NCIBs.
Well, Joseph, let's dig into that last point you made even further. So with the NCIBs and the share buybacks, yeah, if the revenues are depressed a little bit because pricing is depressed, would you rather see companies dial that back? Obviously, if they change the dividend, that's more of a negative signal. Would you rather see them scale back growth? Would you rather see them extend their debt repayments in a environment if the pricing does stay lower for longer? How would you like to see companies maneuver in that environment with all those different options they have?
Okay, if I'm wrong and the price of oil goes down low 50s, breaks 50, survival is important. And the big thing is companies that have debt, the banks or their lenders breathe down their necks and say cut spending, sell assets. So survival becomes the issue. They're not doing NCIBs. They're not doing growing production. They're going to have to cut back their dividends, as we've seen in other periods of time. I just don't buy that case right now. I think that if we went down into 40s, it would, let's say, the Straits of Hormuz gets, or something happens, geopolitically, that everybody gets worried about massive slowdown in economic growth, and the price of oil goes into the 40s. but I don't think it lasts for very long, because I think that, you know, we're going to see Venezuela and Iran off the market by the end of the year, and that will be the bullish reason for higher prices.
Let's talk smaller market cap stocks then, either in oil or nat gas. They have broadly lagged some of the much larger stocks. Some have done well if they've done some strategic acquisitions and been more on that growth trajectory. However, most small market cap stocks in the energy sector are on a growth trajectory. It's just all about ramping it up. How do you see them playing into the mix? What's your forecast?
Well, there's a lot of companies out there that are growing modestly. Some have no debt, like Hemisphere. They pay a 10-cent regular dividend, 2.5 cents a quarter, and then they pay specials, three cents, and I think they pay two last year, one already this year. So, you know, you're looking potentially 16 cents on a $1.73 stock, growing production, and they're looking for more projects to grow. You take Petrus Resources, which is a Cardium producer, 9,000 BOEs a day, 12 cents, so a penny a month, 9% dividend yield. And then, you know, you got a number of others where there's, you know, 9-10% yields where their balance sheets are getting better and better all the time. And, you know, they would hold growth off to keep the dividend because their shareholders want it. Some of them have NCIB, some do not. And some companies believe only in NCIBs and not in dividends. So because they want to, their NAVs are so much higher, and what they're trying to do is buy back stock. And, you know, the remaining stock is more valuable because of the, you know, the shrinkage of the share count, and the reserve base is divided by less shares.
Joseph, let's also talk M&A in the sector. In the environment where oil was in the 70s, 80s, and 90s versus now where it's in the 60s and possibly a little dip into the 50s, does it change the dynamics between buyers and sellers? Are companies more willing to strike a deal in this kind of an environment, in your opinion?
I've been asking companies that, and most of them are saying to me the spread between buy and ask is too large. You know, people don't believe this $62 price of oil. You know, if price of oil was 75, you might see bid asks, you know, narrow. So it's an interesting dynamic here. But you're still seeing deals done. You know, you saw Veren with Whitecap. You know, you're seeing CNQ with the Chevron deal. You just saw Strathcona selling their natural gas assets to ARC and to Tourmaline, and then they're now going after a MEG. So there is deal flow going on, and it's more of a strategic deal flow, but I think it's going well.
So Joseph, kind of on a tangent here, there any new or emerging areas that have your interest, or any new technologies that are in this market that you see as game changers, either for investors or for the sector?
You know, the companies have changed their fracking techniques. They've changed the length of their wells and the productivity of those wells. That's why you're seeing mergers, because you want more land and then you can drill longer reach wells in the Duvernay and the Montney and the, you know, in the Permian and the Eagle Ford. So a lot of that stuff is really, really doing, you know, the technology side. And the industry spends a lot of money on mission controls. You know, they want the frackers to be using natural gas on site. They want to see, you know, more electricity for all of the, you know, other equipment that's on the drilling site. And if they do that, you know, they can argue that we are the most climate-friendly drilling and producing country in the world.
When it comes to oil services, there's a range of different companies you can pick from. Some of them have this technology or some of this new processes you're talking about. Of course, there's pipeline companies, there's drillers, there's other oil services branches. Is there any other companies that stand out where you think they have an edge right now just because of the niche that they're in?
Well, if you look at CES Energy Services, they are the people who provide fluids for the wells, and with the wells being more complicated and longer, they have higher margin products that they're doing well. And if you look at their, you know, second quarter, they had a very decent quarter. And I'm going to be meeting with that management next week to go over it in a little more detail. But I think that stock is quite cheap, and we put it as a top pick last month. And then you look at, you know, Total Energy. They've done very well. in Canada. They're doing very well in Australia, not so well in the States. But, you know, the same thing with Precision and Ensign. They're very big in the States, so they're not doing so well. In the case of Total, they're doing well because they have a very big compression business as well as a very successful Australian business. So it's one of the names that we really like. And CESI is in the other one on the service sector. And we're looking for more names all the time. As I mentioned, Trican is a favorite. So we're looking at the different names and just seeing, you know, what at the price that they're at, are they very attractive? And if they are, then they would go on our top pick section in our SCR. So, you know, for people who'd like to find out about our product and our names that we cover, go to schachterenergyreport.ca. We have two price points, the annual and the quarterly. So if you want to just get your fingers wet and feel out if it's a good product for you, take one quarter. And if you like the product, then go annually, which is cheaper. And then when we start Ion Energy in September as a paid product on Substack, if you want that macro view, which has been very good and we've been very good on, then that's something you might want to take advantage of starting in September.
All right, I'll post a link to that. We get both of Joseph's reports, and they really do a great job bringing you up to speed on what's happening, fundamental side of the oil and natural gas market, and then diving down into the companies through the Schachter Energy Report. That's where Joseph does a lot of work, and that's where you can find out a lot more about the companies in the space. Joseph, great chatting with you, everyone. Thanks for tuning in to this weekend show. Please go back through, especially if you listen on a podcast player, subscribe, like, and review our podcast. Feel free to leave any comments as well. And feel free to share our podcast with any of your associates, coworkers, and family, anyone who you think would enjoy it. As always, you can keep in touch with Shad and I through email. And be sure to listen to all our daily editorials and company updates that we recorded throughout the last week. It sure is busy right now in the resource spec, in the resource sector, especially metals and mining, precious metals. Joseph, again, thank you for your time. Everyone, thanks for tuning in to this weekend show. I hope you all have a great rest of your weekend.
The Corlin Economics Report is produced for A.B. Corlin and Associates. Opinions expressed on this program are intended solely for the entertainment of our listeners, do not constitute investment advice, and are not necessarily those of this network, radio station, or our sponsors. Find out more about this program and today's guests by visiting www.kereport.com. For Al Corlin, this is Colleen Robbins. Join us again next week for the Corlin Economics Report.